If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership. Coming up next on WWER, Porch Talk. Linda Wright sits down with Debbie Stakunis to talk about her calling to be a mom to special needs kids. If you're interested in learning more about some of the groups she mentions in this program, visit our website, wwer.org/Debbie, for a list. Again, that's wwer.org/DEBBIE. Porch Talk on 88.1 FM.
This is Linda Wright, and I have the privilege of interviewing Debbie Stakunis, who is a resident of Colonial Beach, and she has the most wonderful story to tell. So stay tuned. I think you're all going to be wowed by this. Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Hi. I am good.
Good, good. Number one, I know our listeners are going to want to know who you are. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to Colonial Beach.
Okay, so I'm a mom and a former teacher, though still a part-time teacher. We came down to Colonial Beach during COVID to do a safe vacation and get out of our house after 6-8 months of COVID, and we ended up staying at a lovely Verbo over on Lossing, where the sunrise came in the front door in the morning and the sunset was at the back door in the evening. Uh-huh. And Sarah got to drive a golf cart. And as we were looking forward to getting older and waiting for her to graduate and kind of start a new chapter in our lives, we knew we were tired of the Northern Virginia hustle and bustle. And after coming here that time, we kind of crossed, we wanted to move to a place that had water. Water was a must for all of us. And after coming here, we decided we needed calm. About 6 months after we came here was when we started to work on the exactly when was I retiring, when was my sister retiring, came down here. Lord have mercy. I don't know how many trips house hunting. Couldn't find something to meet our needs. And then we found Mike Gray. And he happened to have a lot that wasn't on the water, but we had a view of the water.
Oh, good.
And yeah, that was it.
And that's all you needed.
That's all we needed. We signed the contract. We picked out our, what do you want to call it, blueprint.
Yes.
And we began construction on our house, of course. Being COVID, it probably took twice as long as it does now. Yeah. And then we moved here. It'll be 2 years, the end of October.
2 years. And I have to interject this. And in 2 years, you have certainly drank the Kool-Aid of Colonial Beach because you are immersed in the community, which is going to, which leads me to my next question about your family. Mm-hmm. I would say that you are a unique mother. You have a unique family. So why don't you tell our listeners about your children? Mm-hmm. And you live with your sister, right?
I do. My sister lives with us.
All right. So tell us about your children and their ages.
Well, Tommy was my first, and he came to live with me as a foster child when he was six and a half years old. And this past October, he turned 46.
Oh, my goodness.
As my daughter would say, wow, he has long outlived what his expiration date was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And Tommy's had a very difficult life from his beginnings. I used to say, really without joking, that he was born with a kick me sign on him. Oh. You know how people at bullies, yes, at schools used to put a kick me sign on? Oh, Lord have mercy. My baby had a kick me sign. Mm-hmm. But even with that, this child wakes up every day with a smile on his face, mm-hmm, and a joy and a zest for continuing to be here with the rest of us. He brings us much joy and music, mm-hmm, and music. People who see him around town have all seen him with his piano that is almost attached to his body that is always on his wheelchair tray. So Tom was six. Then when he was around 11 and a half, 12, and just the two of us for those years, I decided, without his agreeing at all, that being an only child was not the best journey for him in life. Okay. He didn't need to be that spoiled, rotten child. And I will tell you, every time another child came along, he would have vetoed them if he could have, except for Sarah, because she can do things for him. And she could even when she was little.
A typical older child.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We were fine. Why did you bring them here? And Jackie came along when Tommy was just hitting his teenage years. And at that point, she actually came from St. Mary's Home in Norfolk. She had been there for like a year and a half after her parents died. And after a few months in West Virginia, and Tommy and I had already been there for almost a decade, her medical needs were so high that being in that area became sort of detrimental, mm-hmm. because to get her anywhere quick was going to be a helicopter.
Yeah.
And the other factor that came into play was I lived in Romney. My parents and my sister lived in Woodbridge, Virginia. So it was a 3-hour trip.
Yeah.
And grandma and grandpa were not happy. And they just used to sporadically show up on my doorstep. And I'm like, I'm 3 hours away. What are you doing in my yard?
Yeah.
Where was the phone call? So they were very into wanting to be more involved in the kids' lives. And we ended up coming to Prince William County. And
closer to the support system that you obviously needed.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we had family. We had more options in schooling. At that point, both Tommy and Jackie had the majority of their medical needs met at Kennedy Krieger and Johns Hopkins.
Okay.
So I went from a 4-hour trip to a 90-minute trip, mm-hmm. which was a huge deal. And in where I was in West Virginia, we didn't have pediatricians in town. We did have two family doctors in town. Mm-hmm. But pediatricians were about an hour away. So we were able to access more medical services, be closer to family. Jackie was with us for about 3 years. She had the year we all got accustomed to everything. She had her golden year where she made progress and thrived. And that last year, I mean, maybe today we would know exactly what happened, but I suspect at some point she had probably had a stroke that we missed, mm-hmm. and we saw this steady decline, mm-hmm. until our last hospitalization for triple pneumonia. She had 3 different pneumonias during that, mm-hmm. last hospitalization, and we actually were getting ready to go home on hospice, and she passed away in the hospital. So that was a little tough.
I want to come back to Jackie in a few minutes, mm-hmm. because that's one of the reasons we wanted to get together and have this conversation.
Yes.
Because of something very special that you have done in honor of Jackie and for other children.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on. You have 2 other children. We have Tommy. We had Jackie.
And then came Trey.
Trey.
And Trey came along a little less than a year after Jackie had passed. And he's my only infant. I picked Trey up from the NICU.
You did.
He was in the NICU. They had no one to take him. And I had been licensed for a few months. And I finally, they made their way all the way down the list is what they used to do then. So first it was family.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would have been an African-American couple, then an African-American single person, then a Caucasian couple, then they got to me,
mm-hmm.
Sort of single white female.
Right.
And
right.
then they hit up my name on the list, and he had just hit. Okay, so he has turned 30. So 30 years ago, in order to leave the NICU, you had to hit 5 pounds. I know now they send them home at 4. But back then, they had to reach that exactly 5-pound mark. So I met Trey on a Friday afternoon, came back Monday, got CPR trained, got trained in the apnea monitor, had to get signed off by the staff in the NICU, and brought him home Monday night. Whew. And at that point, Tommy was like, take the batteries out. That thing makes so much noise. I don't know what it is because I can't see, but whatever it is, take out the batteries. I'm like, no, you get used to it. You really will. Hang on.
So Trey, I don't know if our audience is picking this up yet. Each of your children have physical challenges.
Yes.
Over and above.
Yes.
Yes.
Tommy's issues in life, and I know some people will hear me talk about alphabet soup. Mm-hmm. My kids don't just have one diagnosis. There's all these abbreviations mm-hmm. that you see. Tommy, when he was born, he was born into a very traumatic family life. Mm-hmm. And when he was 22 months old, he had a traumatic brain injury that was the result of child abuse.
Oh, okay.
And so then he was, no one was prosecuted. He was sent to a state mm-hmm. institution to live in West Virginia. And after 4 years there was a specialized foster care program, which he was the first person under the age of 18 mm-hmm. to get placed out of an institution through this foster care program. And at that point in time, and you have to realize that was 40 years ago, he's 46, the folks who ran institutions believed that that was the only place for individuals who were multi-handicapped to live. Mm-hmm. They resented me coming to get him. They, at the last minute, as I was packing his stuff into the car, took away his wheelchair.
Oh, no.
They told me he didn't need a car seat, and I rode 3 hours holding on to him so he didn't hit the window in my car, as he didn't have the ability to maintain an upright position. When I got back the next day, I had to call a friend so we could run to Hill's department store the next day and buy a car seat and buy a stroller, because they refused to let him come with those things and looked me in the face and said, you will bring him back. Oh, well, guess what? You 40 didn't. Years later, I didn't bring him back, and he had a much better life.
Tommy, as your other children, had a blessed life. Can we get back to Trey and Sarah in a second?
Uh-huh.
I want to stop you right here, because I think at this point, people are asking the same question that is going through my mind. Why on earth? What possessed you? Because I'm thinking, if it was 40-something years ago, you were in your 20s, correct?
Mm-hmm. I was 23.
You were 23.
I picked up Tommy.
23 years old,
mm-hmm.
and you decide to be the mother and caregiver to this very challenged little baby mm-hmm. boy. Tell me why.
I'm kind of one of those people, and I thought everybody was born this way, and now I've learned over the years they're not. I knew my path. Even as a young child, there were two things I was supposed to do. And the first thing was become a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I was the kid in the neighborhood who forced all the other children to sit down on the floor and listen to me teach. Because I will teach you math. I will teach you. And they'd be like, are we done? No. You want to go out and play? It's not recess time. I was born to be a teacher, and I was born to be a mom. And the more I got into my teenage years and then I went to college, being a mom was so much more important to me than being a wife. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't believe that being a wife was in my path. And I saw so many other people who worked so hard at their relationships, sometimes at the detriment to their family and their children, mm-hmm. that I was like, maybe someday, but my job is to be a mom first. And so I finished college. I had taught for my first almost year in West Virginia, And then I went to get licensed for foster care. I did not tell my mother when I was going through the licensing process, but when it came to the end and you needed family references, they sent her the packet, being my mother. And I had traveled one weekend from West Virginia to meet her up at Tyson's Corner somewhere, just lunch the two of us, no dad, no sister. And as we had the conversation, she went, no. It's like, Mom, I'm not asking your permission. No, you can't do that. And she was quite serious. And we ended up not speaking for several weeks because it took me until after my mom passed to understand that moment for her. Mm-hmm. Here it was, I knew I was doing what I was destined to do. And I was going to be Tommy's mom. Well, at that time, I didn't know it was Tommy, but I was going to be somebody's mom who needed a mom. I had no understanding until after she passed and I got a little more mature in my thinking that that day for my mom, she grieved not being the mother of a bride, not being in the delivery room, and watching her grandchild be born.
Yeah.
And it took her a good, I don't know, like 2 months to come around. Mm-hmm. And it was just before I was scheduled to go pick up Tommy and bring him home that she kind of got on board. And like, I went to her house for the weekend and she had presents that she thought would fit him. Yeah. And then, and you know, they became great grandparents. And the second time around, they got a little more assertive in their grandparent role, in that I was still working through with Winchester County how and when Jackie was going to come home from St. Mary's. And I had brought her to my house for a weekend trial visit because the social worker was like, you know, I told people I'm only 30, but if Jackie got adopted, I could retire. Mm-hmm. She didn't end up retiring. And so I'm at my house. The social worker has just left my driveway. I live out in the middle of boondocks in West Virginia, and my parents pull in the driveway. And they come in, and it's, where's our granddaughter?
Oh.
And then they ended up contacting the social worker like a month later when it was still like 3 weeks before she was going to come home. And they took themselves like a little, you know, what do older adults take? It's not like a second honeymoon, but just like, you know, a little time to yourselves vacation. Yeah. Well, they decided to take it in Norfolk so that while they were at Norfolk, they could go to St. Mary's Home for Infants and Children.
Oh, I see. They
could go visit. So they went and spent an afternoon with her. Yeah. And, you know, then it became a whole different story. Now
everything
they had a granddaughter.
Everything
kind of worked out. Mom did have a hard time when I said I was doing it for the third time.
Yeah. And
I know
Trey.
Yes.
And Trey is 30 years. I think we came to his birthday party last year, right?
Yes.
30
Trey
years
hit
old.
30 last year, yes. And his mom, his biological mom, did crack during the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And he was baby 4 for her. And none of them did she keep. The first two went to family members as kinship. Baby number 3 was adopted. Trey was adopted. Baby 6 and 7 were also adopted. And I think baby 8 by that point, because of her lifestyle, baby 8 passed from, they didn't say AIDS, but it was, you know, so autoimmune. So she maintained a lifestyle that was not conducive to being pregnant and having healthy babies.
What about Sarah? You brought Sarah on, and most of the community knows
Sarah. They know Sarah better than me.
Yeah, and you know what? I do want to say, Sarah, when I first met Sarah, very timid, you know, barely talked to you. But in the last, I'd say, 6 to 8 months, she has blossomed into such a beautiful young woman, inside and out.
Yes.
And I want to tell me a little bit how you became the mother of Sarah.
So, For number four, I went back to the same agency where Trey had come from. And their rules, they had gotten more rules. One of them being that even if you were bringing on an infant, you needed to have an extra bedroom and things that we didn't have. And they were really trying to channel me into an older child. And I know my niche in life. Mm-hmm. And I'm very good with special needs children, not troubled teenagers. That was not a road I'm equipped to go down. And so I looked into international adoption, and I found an organization which had what they called a promised child program. Mm. So international adoption is very expensive. This agency, with all, I think they worked with 8 countries at the time, in each of those 8 countries, they looked for children who would never be adopted in that country because of a multitude of stigmas, and would not be the child that the typical couple going for an international adoption, wanting a certain type of child and willing to pay $20,000 and $30,000, would be looking for. And Sarah got in the Promised Child program, and I got the first pictures of Sarah when she was like 5 months old. And then we started down, of course, international adoption is a very long process. Yeah. Her birthday is in November, around after she had turned 2-ish. It went through, and the thing about court systems in other countries is they're not on any kind of a set time schedule like we are here. There is no, this will happen in 30, this will happen in 60. It's like the monsoon is coming, you're on the judge's desk, and you know, the days where it's not raining, we might have court.
Okay.
And then it might not be for 3 months.
Right.
And I happened to, and it was very anticlimactic, I got a courier package in the mail where the judge had signed off that I was her guardian. Like at the end of November, I'm like, great. My baby's in India. I'm in Manassas. This doesn't seem quite right. And then it was like, okay, we're working on when she's going to come here. Because they have to go through the orphanage. We'll get the passport and all of those things lined up. And we were on track for January. And then it got moved to end of February. And in January that year was the tsunami.
Oh, yes.
I had no idea how to even say Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka, yeah.
And I woke up and on the TV and I'm like, oh my God, there's India.
Yeah.
Is my baby okay? I'm here. She's there. What? I don't know what to do now. And so I learned about geography really fast. And Sarah's orphanage was in Bangalore. And Bangalore is landlocked. So she was up far enough that the tsunami, there were 3 orphanages they worked with in India. 2 were in tsunami zone. Hers was not. Mm. So that was a relief. And I need to learn more about geography now. And then she came home February 27th because I had an exemption because of the 2 boys that I did not have to travel to India. So she, I met her at Dulles Airport, and her escort brought her, gave me like this little paper bag of medicine and her little duffel bag of clothing, and then like scooted away so she wouldn't cry. And I literally pushed this child into the bathroom to change her clothes and freshen her up after, you know, the long flight.
How old was she?
She was just over 2.
Just over 2.
Just over 2. And here I am with her on the changing table going, hi, I'm your mom. And she has no idea what mom is.
She doesn't speak English?
Well,
or did she?
In Bangalore, there are 400 languages.
Oh, dear.
So at the orphanages, they speak English and Hindi and like 5 others commonly that kind of connect with where children might end up. So they've heard it, and because of other potential parents coming in and out, they've heard English. Mm-hmm. They've seen English, you know, American moms and dads. And I had planned because my biggest worry was, how am I going to bond with her quickly to get her to know who I am? Because living in an orphanage, they would have aunties.
Right.
And you have aunties that have different sections. And so I had arranged a hotel room in Fredericksburg. So she and I stayed in Fredericksburg by ourselves for 3 days.
Yeah.
Which was very handy because then we kind of reset her biological clock.
Yeah.
Because India is 13 hours opposite us. And then I brought her home and met the boys, who were introduced as brother Tommy and brother Trey. And literally until she was like 7 years old, she called them brother Tommy, brother Trey, because that was their names.
Isn't that sweet?
So,
that's so sweet. We're trying to wrap up now. And I have a question.
Sure.
Thinking about you as a 20-year-old, what advice would you have given yourself at that age before you embarked on this motherhood journey?
I think, like, in my old age, I've learned to enjoy and celebrate the very little things in life. And I think back then, and when you're young, you expect everything to move faster and you expect systems to be more responsive.
Yeah.
Whether it's school or medical. And I think in Tommy's young days, I approached so many things in an adversarial fashion because that's how medicine was back then.
Mm.
You know, Tommy was not a top priority for anything, mm-hmm. whether it was school or, you know, a medical procedure or something. And it took me years to learn that honey goes farther than vinegar.
Got it.
It does. It really does.
That's very good advice.
It
very
is.
Very good advice.
And it's hard to comprehend it when you're young.
I know our audience might want to know this, but you gave me a gift called Jackie's Touch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book that you wrote about Jackie's short life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to recommend that anyone who wants to hear a little bit more about your story, it told me an awful lot about you. And the advice that you just said about being non-adversarial, I mean, it's pretty clear here. You you had to deal with a lot. So if someone wanted to get your book, Jackie's Touch, how would they get it?
It is on Amazon. So if you type in Jackie's Touch on Amazon.
And could you spell Jackie's Touch for us?
Yes. J-A-C-K-I-E-S apostrophe S-T-O-U-C-H. Or if you just put in the last name Stachunas, S-T-A-C-H-K-U-N-A-S, Jackie's Touch will pop up. And Sarah also wrote a book about a year after I wrote that called Speedy's Haunt Pace East, which was kind of a play on the school she was going to at the time. And it's a little science fiction about these characters taking over her teachers.
Oh my God.
And school and getting police involved. And it's really, it's very cute. And I usually put the link out for it at Christmas time.
Okay.
It makes a good read for like third to fifth grade,
okay.
Or if you just need a funny ha-ha,
okay.
And you know Sarah's sense of humor,
yes.
Boy, it smacks of Sarah and sarcasm.
Okay.
It really does.
Then that is definitely going to be on my list. I know there's one other message that you want to share with the community, a way that you can help children. And it's called Jackie's Baskets.
Yes.
Correct?
Correct.
I know Jackie's birth or her
birthday.
Her birthday was
July 11th.
July 11th. So it just passed.
Yes.
And by the time this is on the radio, it will be past the July 11th. But I know this is a ongoing project. So you want to give us just a little bit about that and then how the community can support this effort, because I think it's wonderful.
Absolutely. So Jackie passed away on April 15th, and grief is a really tough thing to deal with. And at that point, I wasn't quite 30. And it's really, like motherhood, it's a journey that you have to figure out. And probably several weeks after she passed, I racked my brains thinking about a way that I could go back into Giants Without Crying when I saw the canned peaches, or go to Target and shop in the baby section again, because she wasn't very big. At six, mm-hmm. she was a size 3T. Mm-hmm. So, and then I thought, well, what if I go in the stores and buy things for babies who are born on July 11th, and I can celebrate her birthday? So that very first year, I bought and I put together 7 baskets that I then brought to the hospital. And at that point, it was lovely that mm-hmm. the social worker who was there through our last 2 hospitalizations was my contact person.
Oh, wonderful.
She knew us. Yeah. She knew my daughter. She took the baskets. She got them to the right people. And over the years, like, a few friends would come over here and there. And I'd say probably now the last 10 years, we've actually had what we call packing parties. And the last 2 years, last year and then earlier this week, we were blessed to have the packing parties at St. Mary's in the parish hall. And we had about 10 people there this past Tuesday. And between things that I purchased during the year and other people who know about it, get things donated from friends during the years, they mm-hmm. shop. I have a cousin in Connecticut who makes me almost 100 handmade bibs every year.
Oh.
And we use those to put these baskets together. And we collect bibs, diapers, bottles, baby clothes, my favorite stuffed toys, especially around here now, is Dollar General. Like, 4 days after the holiday,
yeah.
you can go in and get the Valentine bears for 90% off, you know, the Easter yeah. bunnies uh-huh. for 75% off. But this past Tuesday, we made 118 gift bags.
Oh, my goodness.
And then Tuesday wow. afternoon, I drove 70 of those to St. Mary's, Mary's Shelter, which is in Fredericksburg. And they're an organization that work with single expecting moms. They house them through the pregnancy and after. Their job is to get the mom and their family to the point where they can then be self-sufficient and be able to, you know, not need as much assistance. So they help them with jobs, they help them, but they now have 30 houses where they support these moms. So they
these
were
baskets are so
absolutely
helpful.
They were so excited when they came outside to help Sarah and I
wonderful.
Carry them in. And then because about 50% of the donations still come from Northern Virginia, because that's where we used to do it, I no longer have a connection at the hospital, but I was very blessed yesterday that another person I know who has a nonprofit, I was like, where can I go here that these will be made use of in Prince William County? She connected me with an organization called Carry to Full Term. And they have a similar kind of setup that is only a few years old, but they started it on the grounds of St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Haymarket.
Okay.
So they have a very large house where they have several moms who are expecting, that they are helping through the pregnancy and then helping to get job skills and helping to get them out there and housed. So they got the other 40 baskets yesterday, and they were just thrilled to pieces. So those are our 2 connections now, and I feel really good with both of them because they're there. They have moms who we know are going to get these things. These things are not sitting in an office. You know, they're going to be used.
So, can you tell our audience how they can help, either through donations? Where would they send the donations? What's the simplest way for someone to get involved?
if they purchase something and if we, you know, if they know us, I can pick up or they can drop off at my house all year long because I know storage is an issue for people. We do have an Amazon wish list, which says Jackie's Baskets.
That's perfect.
Yes. So if they go to Jackie's Baskets, I usually try and put things in there during the year. There were several people in town this year who couldn't come to the party, but they went in like a week before, and the Amazon boxes just show up on my doorstep.
Which makes it easy that you don't
Very
have to
easy.
Store.
Yes.
Okay, so could we have that again? You go to Amazon.com.
And then you're going to look up in the menu box. You will usually see wish lists.
Okay.
And then if you type in Jackie's Baskets, our list should come up. And you will see it's, you know, diapers and wipes and bottles and clothing and all of that. And then I can take donations anytime. And if people have, you know, gift cards, you know how Targets, you buy $50 in laundry detergent, they give you a $10 card and you put it in the bottom of your purse. I've had people give me those and then I'll just take a stack of them. And I'll sit down at the computer with them and go through and make an order for drive-up delivery. Because if you do that, then they give you an extra, like, $5 off.
Oh, there you
and
go.
And so, you know, so there's all kinds. I try and be very thrifty to get us the most amount we can to get out to the most amount of moms and babies. So that we can make that impact. And we can celebrate Jackie and we make an impact on new families.
I don't even know what to say at this point. I know I have to wrap it up, but I could talk to you forever. You are an amazing woman. I'm sure you've heard it over and over again. God bless you.
Well,
God bless you and these beautiful children that you have in your care. And I just want to thank you so much for letting me interview you.
Oh, thank you. I love talking about my family.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
If you're interested in learning more about some of the groups mentioned in this program, visit our website, wwer.org/Debbie.